Hello, one and all, and welcome back to our humble podcast. Today we have something slightly different in store for you. We have a visitor with us today. We wish a warm welcome to Nate from the NMI podcast. He's here to help us introduce a new series of episodes to the podcast where we will discuss some of our favourite games with special guests and discuss why we feel they deserve a place in the Hall of Fame. Let's not delay. It's time to goat up.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome back to The Missing Man, your podcast, the most professional gaming podcast on the internet you've ever listened to. I am joined, obviously, by the lovely Zach. And as Zach said in the intro, this is our first ever episode with someone else on it. Shocking. I want to introduce you all to Nate, everyone.
Hello, everybody. How's it going? It's really great to be on the podcast. Long-time listener, first-time visitor and all that stuff. Yeah, it's very good to be visiting. Thank you.
Welcome, my man. It's a pleasure to have you on for a brand new section, a brand new show we are calling The Goats. And obviously, if you don't know what GOAT is, or the term GOAT, it means the greatest of all time. And a little while ago, on my GG app, I think we spoke about this a few episodes ago, I created a little list, a little hidden list called The Goated List. And me and Zach thought it'd be really funny if, we got more people involved with that. So we're going to be here today chatting about two of our goated games, and Nate is also going to drop two of his goated games as well. Isn't that right, Zach?
That's right, yeah. So we're looking forward to jumping straight into the list. Who wants to kick things off?
Should we let Nate go first?
Yeah, of course, I reckon that would be right.
Visitors first. We're polite people here.
Honestly, you guys, the original plan was, much bigger list than above two, and it was probably the hardest list I've ever actually had to try to create, to be honest, outside of films, to be honest. But going off of games though, like mine, obviously, as Connor will know, I'm a very narrative driven person when it comes to video games. So my first video game is probably one of the best games ever for its twist ending. And that would be Knights of the Republic. I think, this game is the pinnacle of the video game. Well, one of the pinnacles of video game twists, in my opinion. I think it brought a new cinematic flair to video games when it was first introduced. It also made me very frustrated when I first tried to play this game because I had a 750 megabyte RAM PC and it was a gigabyte RAM PC requirement. So I had to wait 6 months for my Xbox.
A whole gigabyte requirement.
Those were the days, man. Those were the days.
And those were the days.
I think the fact that we had, like, the hopefully the recent announcement of like the remake that will eventually be coming. Just going back to this game now, I'd love to replay it at some point. I'd probably play it on a mobile device if I'm going to play it, to be honest, because I think playing it on a console, it would feel a bit. It does feel quite dated now, in all honesty. But back in the day, those cinematics, The initial intro of like going into that game, getting attacked by Darth Malak, everything that goes into that, exploring all these new planets in the Star Wars universe, which wasn't really happening before. And again, introducing to the most badass, I don't know what you call him, Grey Jedi, what could be said, the man with two sabers, Darth Revan himself. And the fact that you were playing as that character the entire time. I think I could say spoilers for a game that's over 20 years old by this point.
I think you're safe, yeah.
Yeah. If they eventually do a movie of this, me and Connor have to discuss this movie quite a bit. They need to take ownership of this. But yeah, that is literally my first title. The fact that we introduce, so many great NPC characters, side characters into this world. Yeah, it's just a stunning game, to be honest.
I mean, that is a fantastic pick, my man. The Knights of the Republic series is absolutely fantastic. We covered it very briefly on when we did a Star Wars episode, didn't we, Zach?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic game. Not just for a Star Wars game, it's also an impressive RPG game as well. Heavily based off of ye olde tabletop RPGs. It traces its roots back to the progenitor games, like we talked about in our Fallout episode recently as well. It's literally pen and paper RPGs.
Yeah, it was kind of struck me as well as a bit of like, it was like Mass Effect before Mass Effect was a thing. You can see where the roots have come from, right, with that. But it was, I found, because I went back and tried to replay the first one recently.
Oh, wow.
And I found the combat very jarring. It's very different,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah, no, again, you know, like, again, I think playing on mobile would give it that edge, because I feel that, like, playing on console, again, yeah, as you said, it is very jarring, but playing on mobile, because it does have a very drawn out turn-based system, which I think doesn't play well to its standards today's degree, especially after our Dragon Ages and our Mass Effects and everything. But again, this is, I see this as the granddaddy of, like, these sorts of, like, intro genres and everything. We had, like, you know, Dragon Age a bit later and everything, but I do think this was sort of like the starting point for a lot of those titles.
I think that's a very good take, actually, to be fair. You are right, and what you said as well, Zach, is very true. Like, BioWare obviously have gone on quite a long way since the OG days, right? And the Couture games, they do just ooze that old school RPG vibe. And I know what you said about playing on, like, a mobile device, to be fair. Would you think, and I know, Nate, you're actually a big fan of this now, aren't you? Would you think this is Steam Deck appropriate?
So I've actually been looking into this, like, because obviously the issue is, like, you know, EA isn't trying to get Steam Deck games to work. I'm going to try and figure this out at the moment, but I do think this could be a good Steam Deck game. And I do have to, you know, very quickly plug the fact that, you know, the fact that I eventually got my Steam Deck was because of Connor and all my accessories, because of Zach's recommendation for the hard drive extensions and everything, like, and I've been loving it ever since. So it's because of this podcast I bought my Steam Deck.
Yeah, you hear that, Valve? You know, we accept royalties via cash or check. You know, just letting you know.
When we're done accepting the Capcom money, we accept the Valve money next.
That's it. We're shilling for Valve now, so
relationship over with Capcom. Now Valve is my new best friend. We're glad. We are glad though that you got the Steam Deck based off our recommendations. To be fair, you a slight sidetrack though, wouldn't be to miss man your podcast if we didn't sidetrack. How are you finding the Steam Deck yourself? Have you been enjoying it?
Oh, so many games to just try and get through as well. Like, you know, I think the fact that it's often the opportunity to just move away from, you know, PC and just relax, even just on the sofa or whatnot, playing all these PC games. But it's like, they've done such an excellent job with the optimization of the games on this console. I'm not going to lie, I've attempted to play Gotham Knights on it. They've even gone and said, no, this isn't even playable now. You can't even do it. But yeah, you know, talk to Connor about that. You know, when I first got my Switch, I decided to play Zelda for the first ever time. So Breath of the Wild was my first ever Switch and Zelda game on there. And I said to Connor, you know, with the Steam Deck, I wanted to attempt to play a game that I never played before. So Yakuza, and Connor was very happy with that, was the game I went on to for my Steam Deck, and I'm loving it.
Fuck yes. Yakuza is a fantastic series. That's like a dragon you're playing, isn't it?
That is correct, yeah. Yeah. It's. I think also, like, a lot of people said that it's probably the best intro game to go into now because it's new, new combat style.
I agree. I disagree in parts, but I agree as well. If you want the new Yakuza experience, 100%. If you want the old Yakuza experience, the Zero is the best place to start for sure. Without a doubt, but Yakuza is a fantastic series. That does feature on my list, but I'm not talking about it today, but it does feature on my list.
Yeah, you've been twisting my arm for ages to try and play that. I just haven't got around to it.
Oh, yes, mate. Yeah, the original Yakuza series you'll really like as well, Zach, because it's like a beat 'em up sort of game.
Yeah.
Rather than anything else, whereas like a Dragon is actually more of a turn-based RPG game. Very, very JRPG heavy, whereas the original has JRPG elements in it, but it is actually like a beat 'em up. Like a button masher game.
Yeah, I'm getting lost in all of these games, honestly. If I had a pound for every game that I meant to play and didn't play, I'd be able to buy an entirely new Steam library. Honestly, it's madness.
And did you already have a fairly large Steam library, Nate, before you got your deck?
Yeah, my games library in general across all platforms is massive. I have over 1,000 games on Steam. I have, you know, because I'm a humble bundle bitch, as it were. And my PlayStation library is 400 deep with the library.
Oh wow, your PlayStation library as well. It's impressive, my man.
There's so much, man. Like so many titles to try and play.
That's incredible. And to be fair, I always think that, and I assume you agree as well with this, that if, you know, if you already have a Steam library like that, to be fair, getting the deck is just a fantastic addition to that, because you've already got so much you can play with. You know, you've got so many games that you think was ready. That was a problem I found anyway when I had my Steam Deck. I was like, I've already got so many games. What game do I play first?
I mean, I feel really bad because when it comes to, because I really recently played God of War before the big boy comes out next week.
Yes.
Yeah. And I kind of feel bad like playing on my laptop. I'm thinking that would have been the game to reintroduce myself to the Steam Deck. Like, I think that would have been great. Like, I've actually gotten to play Spider-Man on that. Very well performed, you know, it's very runs very well. But yeah, no, honestly, thank you guys so much. It was a And also, I kind of feel bad because, like, you guys waited a year for your Steam Deck. I got, like, 2 months for mine.
We're not salty about it at all.
No.
not even a little bit.
I'm just happy, to be fair, that people can get theirs now in a promptly manner. Because it was literally almost about a year today for me when I got mine. I think Zach was, like, a little bit over his. But
yeah, a little bit more.
Very close still, nonetheless, right? Oh, my God. Absolutely insane.
You know what, though, mate? It was worth the wait. It was absolutely worth the wait. I would wait another year again for it. It was that good. Like, it's been that good. I've really enjoyed every moment with it. So
that'll be the Steam Deck 2.
Yeah.
Steam Deck 2. Yeah. We have discussed the potential for Steam Deck 2, right? And what that could mean. I'm interested if they would do something like that so quickly. I don't know if they will, but I'm interested to see what they do with it. Obviously, like the Switch, right? We've been waiting for a Switch Pro for a very long time now.
It's coming.
There's still no Switch Pro.
I'm sorry, but like with Breath of the Wild 2 coming out, like Tears of the Kingdom, they have to do a new one. And you know, and because like Breath of the Wild was cross-platform as well, I think they're going to delay it one more time, and they'll do a major summer announcement for the next Switch. I think that's what will happen.
I mean, it is looking a little bit almost like when the first Breath of the Wild came out, because it came out on the Wii U as well as the Switch, and the Wii U version was jacked up beyond belief. It did not run very well at all.
Bless the Wii U.
Exactly, rest of you. But this is kind of, I'm worried they might replicate this behavior here, and they're going to be like, it's going to come out on the Switch and Switch Pro, but it actually runs like ass on the Switch, and you have to get a Switch Pro to play it. I'm hoping they don't do that approach, because they did it with the DS as well, and it was rather sad. They did the old 3DS and the new 3DS, and then there were certain games that wouldn't even run on the old 3DS. You had to have the new 3DS, which actually said new 3DS. That was the name of the game as well, and it was really bizarre, very jarring, like, I guess, way to keep people ingrained in your system by them making it so they couldn't actually play games on their system, which is near enough the same as the old one.
As long as I play the next Tears of the Kingdom Breath of the Wild game and I realize I could get a horse not 70 hours into my 140-hour playthrough, so that's one thing I have. But
did you get a horse?
It's at the beginning. I didn't see it. I didn't see the horse at the beginning. So I went like 70 hours into my halfway through. Just
you walking. Ran everywhere.
Yeah, I ran everywhere.
Oh my God, man, that's incredible.
And like, also, you just see when you replot your map, you just see how quicker I get after the 70-hour mark. It's like,
you must have been breezing through this after the 70-hour mark, right?
Very much so.
Wow, that is. I mean, you had the hardcore mode experience there, didn't you?
Oh yeah.
No much, fast travel, yeah. Strictly no. Ground only for Nate.
Yeah.
So Kotor was your first choice.
That's right, yeah.
Were you a dark side or a light side boy?
Oh, I'm always light side, my man. You know, when I do video games, you know, the good side is always like the canon in generally in video games. And again, yeah. I'm too much of a nice boy, you know. I have to definitely rep that side. But I gotta say that, you know, I made sure to get my purple lightsaber very early on, because purple is the best choice in my opinion.
You know, I would have been inclined to agree with you up until recently. Now, I went back and replayed a little bit of the Jedi Fallen Order game. Love right, it. I have an orange lightsaber, and I think orange has become my new color. I think that looks awesome.
Ooh, orange. That's quite a nice color for a lightsaber blade, isn't it?
Yeah. And I reckon you could kind of get away with being a Sith and having an orange lightsaber. So it's close enough to red, isn't it? You know?
I mean, that is very true, to be honest. You know, it's kind of like just being a little bit cheeky, as it were. Like, I'm not that evil, but I'll still cut you down.
It's like a nice amber, like auburn lightsaber color, you know.
Yes.
Autumnal lightsaber.
Perfect for the time of year that we're recording, right?
It's perfect for the time of year, actually. Yeah, it's very seasonal. Imagine that, the seasonal lightsaber changes when the seasons pass.
It's the pumpkin saber.
Ooh, the pumpkin saber. No, don't give Disney ideas. They'd probably put that in the parks, to be fair.
Yeah, no, they would. Totally would.
It's a pumpkin spice lightsaber.
The pumpkin spice saber. I love it. Zach, my man, would you like to go next? What's your first game?
Yeah, absolutely. I like that you started off with the theme of twist endings as well. And I feel like I have one that I can lean into quite heavily with that one. It's Red Dead Redemption. Is my pick. Now, I was blown away by this game.
When
I played it the first time, I couldn't put it down. Mm. I just could not put it down. It was amazing.
Honestly, man, I'm gonna stop you right there, because I agree 100% with everything you're saying right now. The first Red Dead game is nothing short of perfection. to be fair. It is just, damn, it's just a fucking fantastic game.
Yeah, you know, and it's now obviously Red Dead has become a mainstay in the Rockstar kind of arsenal, if you will. You know, Red Dead 2 was obviously a big success as well. But I mean, the first Red Dead Redemption for me is it. It is. That's it for me. It doesn't get any better than that. It was a massive step up from its roots from Red Dead Revolver, obviously, with the PlayStation 2 game. That kind of flew under a lot of people's radar, I think, back in the day. And the games, while set in the same time period, they're presented so differently. Red Dead Revolver was more of a, it was mission based, but there was no free roam. It was just almost like an arcade shooter, it felt, in a lot of ways.
I was going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think it is Red Dead Revolver at all, but I always confuse it with another game that is a rail shooter, cowboy rail shooter. But that wasn't Red Dead Revolver, was it?
No.
There was another game that was a rail shooter-like game, but for cowboys in it. And I can't remember the name of it.
I don't know. I know there's been loads of cowboy games over the what was it? Call of Your Heart?
That's the one I think Juarez, I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of that one, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a rail shooter, isn't it?
I don't know.
Cowboy rail shooter. I think it is.
But yeah.
False information.
So yeah, we'll Google it after and then people can tell us we're wrong. But what a glow up from PlayStation 2 then into the 360 PlayStation 3 era with Red Dead Redemption. Very, very compelling story, relatable characters. You know, this fact that, you know, you're playing as this guy, John Marston, he's an ex-outlaw, kind of answering for his past, doing what he can so him and his family can move on and try and move past their checkered history that they have, trying to make a life for themselves, you know, in the West. And I think they are such relatable characters, because I know, I probably speak on everyone else's behalf here, but you'd do anything that you could to make sure that your loved ones were the best off that they could be, right? So his kind of intentions, even though he's, you know, his history would lead him to be a bad guy, you see the man behind the behind the outlaw. And I loved the way that the story unfolds, you know, the friends that he makes, the enemies, and the way that his past comes back to haunt him.
It is just such an engrossing tale, to be fair. The storyline is so wonderfully put together, and the ending, well, I don't want to drop any major spoilers, tear to my eye. Definitely. A little bit of the watery eye after playing the ending, man, to that game, because it's a long ass campaign. It's not a campaign you should, you know, undertake lightly, right? It's a big boy. And you know, by the time you experience quite a lot with the characters, you learn quite a lot about the characters, and you build up a really big relationship with those characters as well. And it is very sad. It's quite emotional.
Yeah. And the game gives you kind of almost a bit of a false end as well. You start to think, oh, okay, great, everything's going to work out. Mm-hmm. And it just turns it on its head. And I've never felt a game wrench my heart from my chest quite like that game has. I could probably count on one hand. Really fantastic. It is just good through and through. It was like, you know, they took the formula that GTA had. GTA is a fun game, you know, but gets a bit boring for me after a while. But sticking it in a cowboy setting and giving us that compelling story, it just took it to the next level for me. I don't know whether you guys agree or not, but
I mean, like, I unfortunately, like, I never completed Red Dead Redemption. I played a lot of it. I knew the ending going in, because I think it was at a time period where a lot of people talk about it, so a lot of stuff essentially slipped out. I played a bit of Undead Nightmare, really enjoyed that. I thought it was an excellent DLC, to be honest. Yeah, you are right though, like, the actual, like, when it comes to Rockstar, I feel that was the game outside of GTA that sort of gave them, you know, that narrative a step up, essentially. And I think, you know, I've majorly played Red Dead Redemption 2, which I didn't even know was a prequel at first until I started playing it. So the fact that you literally start off going to find John at the beginning was, I thought, was an excellent way to sort of hand the character baton over to a degree. And again, like, you know, as Connor said, like, with the end of Red Dead Redemption 2, I was legitimately crying at the end of the game myself. So, like, you know, they definitely know how to play with a narrative. And I think, is it, like, I'm trying to work out, is it available on Steam Deck? Because I think that might be a game for me to actually go and play on Steam Deck, to be honest.
I don't know if the first one is.
The second one is.
The second one's definitely available on most platforms.
I don't think the first one's actually on PC at all. I don't think a PC port ever happened to the first game.
No, I think they were toying with the idea of doing a HD remake, but I think that has been canned off the back of just everything that's been happening.
I think it might have also been canned off of the back of the GTA remasters, which are...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was sort of alluding to that without saying it. HD remasters for those were...
I tried to play the Red Dead Redemption through the PlayStation Now, PlayStation Plus, like streaming. It was like, I've got gigabit internet, and even like, you know, I couldn't. It was too like disconnecting for me, in my opinion. Like, I think the fact playing on 4K screen as well didn't help the situation, so it was very stretched.
Yeah.
I think that would be a great game for Steam Deck if they could do it. Like, but the problem is that I know they have the Rockstar launch, and I don't know how that plays out with the Steam Deck at the moment. So yeah, that's a frustration. But no, that's definitely a game I'd love to eventually go back and play. I'm really sad that, again, as you said, the HD remake, from what they were rumored, just didn't happen, which was really annoying.
It's a bit disappointing, to be fair. I would have loved to have seen a port of that game for easy accessibility. Obviously, as you mentioned before on the podcast, not endorsing it again, there is ways you can obviously play this game on your Steam Deck if you're very talented and very, you know, down with the kids, technologically minded. So there is ways to play it, but what we're referring to here would be a native PC port of the Red Dead 1 would be fantastic, because like you said, Zach, everything you said is completely true, man. The storyline for Red Dead 1 is nothing short of perfection. It was such a good game, such a heart-wrenching game at times. The cast of characters you introduced to throughout the game are absolutely fantastic, and I agree, it is a lot more engaging than GTA is. And I think the stories of GTA are not particularly bad. GTA 5 had an okay story. GTA 4 had an okay story as well. And obviously, you know, the older ones, they have stories were okay. But I don't know, the stories never got me as much as Red Dead did. That really, really fucking got me, now.
They're just not on the same level, are they? You know, and it's very, very good that you mentioned Undead Nightmare as well, because that was on my, obviously, within what I was going to say. Undead Nightmare is hands down one of my favorite expansions to any game I've ever played. Undead Nightmare, just again, because I'm a massive fan of zombies anyway, as it is, right? Having that great melting pot of all the feelings and characters and all that you already had with the base game of Red Dead Redemption, and then chucking zombies into the mix as well, it's a match made in heaven for me. Totally. Great.
100%. The Undead Nightmare DLC was so fucking good. And not only just for introducing like zombies, right? I think one of the best things about that DLC for me was that it played with mythological shit as well. You know, like you had the horses of the apocalypse, didn't you?
Yeah.
How cool was that, dude? They were so fucking sick. Like, because getting your horses in Red Dead was always a source of joy for me. Because obviously, I mean, they were your equivalent of cars, right? In GTA, you know, you wanted to get the fastest car, you wanted to get the coolest horse in Red Dead. So like, what cooler horse is there than the fucking horse of the apocalypse, you know?
I've got a question for you, for both of you. Which was your favourite out of the four horses in the game?
I'm not going to lie. It's been so long that I actually can't remember now, to be honest. You know, it's been over at least 15, no, 12 years to play that game.
Yes.
I think... it is actually kind of hard to remember what each one does. I think Death was my favorite one, just because it looked cool.
White Hawk,
And also the heads exploded when it ran past, didn't they?
Yes.
Is that what it did? You either ran into them, or when you ran past zombies, their heads just exploded.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Fucking funny. But also Pestilence is really cool as well, because it just looked like a horrific, like Judge Mortis, Judge Dredd looking horse.
Yeah. I think mine was always War. I always loved the War Horse, because it was on fire. That was just cool. I thought that was great.
It's shit hot, isn't it?
I just thought it's probably charring my coat, but I don't care. It looks cool.
It's the rule of cool.
Oh yeah, 100%. And you could like set people on fire as you ran over them with it. So
I mean, you're basically Ghost Rider at that point.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Very much. Yeah. Also getting Darksiders vibes as well with this conversation, you know.
Oh yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
I love a good game series, actually. Not on my list, but a good series nonetheless.
Definitely, yeah. Just a little bit more about Red Dead as well. I liked some of the other little bits and pieces that you had. Obviously, the multiplayer was quite fun as well. I liked the multiplayer from the first one. I thought second one didn't quite hit the same note. But
I agree actually with that. I kind of wanted a bit more from the second one, really, especially with what they did. I say what they did, what they're still doing with GTA, right? The GTA Online, obviously, but the infinite money machine, that thing just keeps on rolling and content just keeps on coming out for it. You know, that's still, I think, if not one of the longest supported online titles, that's still going, because Rockstar have put so much support into that series, into that online kind of service, it's grown so much from when it first came out. Like, there's more fucking DeLoreans and shit in that now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think
maybe the only game that could outdo it for continuous online service is probably like World of Warcraft or something like that, right?
It's up there for sure, man. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like the multiplayer was great. Like, and it was, you know, being able to play like Liar's Dice with your mates within the game and stuff like that. And then, oh, mate, you cheated. And then you just back out and shoot him in the head.
The parlor games used to be really, really good in that for sure. They were really fun. Yeah. And the deck of cards that you used to use in the game was really nice as well. Like, I liked the color and how they styled the cards. It had a really nice art style. A lot of the kind of fonts and a lot of the UI in that game had a really clean art style, which is really, just really tasty. And it's just very, very bold, very dark black, dark red colors, extremely eye-catching.
Yeah, and just from a graphic perspective, obviously, you know, Rockstar have always been on the top of their game in terms of making graphically beautiful games for the time that they come out, right? And Red Dead is absolutely no exception to that. Like, you can stand there in game. Oh, you could be up there, sat on your horse, watching the sunrise, and it's just like you're there. It's breathtaking.
I mean, I do. Like, even just the cover art, you know, seeing the cover art itself. Like, I actually have to give, thinking about it, I have to give major props to Max Payne in that regard, because I feel like, you know, that's probably a major influence for Red Dead. It's actually more like the inverted colors to a degree, like just more a little splash of red, but. Yeah, no, I have to definitely give Max Payne. Again, they've created some amazing games, and Red Dead is an amazing choice, man, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Max Payne's a good one as well, actually. I'm a big fan of Max Payne. Yeah, very
good. I was going to say, you like Max Payne, don't you, man? You've got a lot of love for that game, too.
Absolutely, mate, yeah. And again, we're going to have a remaster of that real soon as well, so...
One and two, yeah.
I'm excited for that. That is
very
really
cool,
good.
Actually, to hear that's going ahead. I'm really psyched to see about the remaster, because it's the original guys doing it as well, isn't it? Rockstar are just like overseeing it and producing it, but publishing it, sorry. But yeah, the OG team are working on it, which is really nice to see, actually. That's a really nice honor for the game.
Yeah. It's crazy that you mentioned that as well, because now I'm thinking about all the similarities between Max Payne and Red Dead, like the bullet time, Dead Eye, right? Same thing, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you're right, actually, to be fair. Ooh, that's quite a big one. Link's cracked the code. The Max Payne, actually, Red Dead code. You heard it here first. You're going to see loads of videos popping on YouTube now, and it's like people will be like, oh my God, did you know Red Dead?
It's actually the same game.
Max and Marston, badasses for life.
Oh, mate, that writes itself. That needs to be a comic book series at the very least.
He's good. He's good.
They said you were good.
I do try.
But that's a fantastic pick, my man. A fantastic pick.
All right, we'll move over to you then, Connor. What's your pick?
Okay. My first one is a game that is extremely near and dear to my heart. And it is the first Oddworld game, Oddworld Abe's Odyssey. Released in ye olde 1997 on the PS1 and the PC. And this was one of the very first games I played on the PS1 back in the day. And damn, this game just stuck with me. It absolutely gripped me and absorbed me. And when I was a kid, I could never actually play it properly. It was so difficult. I remember dying a hell of a lot in this game and getting lost in this game. It's a very strange world, Oddworld. If you've ever played it, you know what I mean. It's a very... it is... in essence, a satire of real life. The whole thing is very satirical in nature, but when you're a kid, obviously you don't pick up on any of that until you get a lot older and you realize that a lot of the themes in the game are based on a lot of real world things and a lot of real world problems. And it tells a very interesting, very dramatic story, but Oddworld in itself, it was like an enigma when I played it when I was younger. I explored such a small surface of that game. When I went down and replayed it when I was older, I got to see the full game and it just blew me away. I was like, I can't believe it. It was even more to this game, because as a kid, I just could not play it at all because it was so goddamn difficult. And even trying to get the endings was a nightmare, because that game has two endings. And to get one of them, you have to literally save every Rinocchon in the game pretty much. And, you know, failing that a single time results in the bad ending. And the bad ending is just not very satisfying at all. And to do that, and even if you play through the game, you still wouldn't have enough to get the good ending, because there's tons hidden in secret areas which you don't even know about. And it's like you go back and you're like, holy shit, there's so much going on in this game. I can't believe it. For people that don't know, the Oddworld series is very hard to describe the kind of games they are. But the first two games are kind of side-scrolling action kind of puzzle games. And they're very dark. They're very kind of grim in places, but not like grimdark. It's, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe really what the Oddworld games are like visually, but I don't know, all I can describe them is breathtaking. They truly, truly got me lost as a kid in the best way possible. I think we spoke a little while ago, the Fallout episode maybe, when we were talking about pre-rendered cutscenes and stuff like that, Zach.
Yeah.
And how good pre-rendered cutscenes were for kind of old games. And Abel was just chocked full of pre-rendered cutscenes, and it has such a fantastic story. You can sit and watch that entire, you know, all the cutscenes for the game, and it comes to about 50 odd minutes, an hour long, and you can watch that as like a little film almost. And it's so well done because you're back in the day, right? They put so much effort into those pre-rendered cutscenes. It was incredible to watch. You really got like lost in it, and it felt like a film, like an interactive film, really. And for younger me, that was insane, mind blowing.
You're going back and rediscovering it as a completely different experience. It's kind of like when adults go back and they watch cartoons from when they were kids, right? Mm. It's like there's whole other layers of humor locked in there that you just didn't have the context for when you were a kid, right? And I feel like you talking about that, it kind of reminds me of like going back and watching SpongeBob as an adult. It's a completely different experience, isn't it, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. There is a lot, obviously, we always talk about it, right? There's a lot of media that exists that have a lot of, you know, hidden jokes and little quips and stuff like that, and stuff you don't pick up on when you're a kid, but the adults in the room are like, oh, no. and Abe was just full of that. Like, it was absolutely stupendous to see that. Like, when I went back to it, I was like, God, look at all this life that Abe lives and how absolutely crap it is, and how he's like trying to save all his friends, and all his friends are, you know, enslaved to this massive corporation, and this corporation is going to turn him into food. It's like, my God, the context here is insane.
It's great though. I love it when games, when they apply a little bit of a social comment, it's great, isn't it? They just kind of weave it in a little bit.
The games themselves kind of went in a very weird direction. I want to sit down really and do like a full deep dive into the Oddworld series, because there's so much going on there with the company, and the company has a very long and kind of sad existence, actually, because, you know, quite a few times they survived going bankrupt, almost closing the business down, getting sold off to publishers that made very iffy decisions with their IPs, and, you know, eventually coming back again and coming out of a game last year, which is called Soulstorm. Which is a remake and a retelling of the second Abe game, Abe's Exodus, which is also on my list as well. So join them both together, because they're both pretty much incredible and they're both very similar. Zach and Nate, have you guys played any of the Oddworld games yourselves?
So I did try to play Abe's Odyssey way back in the day, same time as you. I think, like, unlike you, where you persevered through, you powered through the difficulty of the game. All I heard was like those sounds and the lemmings aspect of it. I found that hilarious, and, you know, the walking wasps, as I call them. I didn't know their actual name at the time.
The walking wasps.
Yeah. Like,
do you mean the slings?
Yeah, exactly. I just remember those walking wasps, to be honest.
It's an interesting way to describe them, actually. I've not heard that one, but I kind of like it. It does make sense.
Yeah, but again, I totally see people's like understanding and like the love appreciation of this game, but for some reason, it just was not for me. Like, I will say, like, I wasn't into Spyro or Crash Bandicoot growing up either. I've replayed them in recent years, came to love them. Game tastes have changed. But for some reason, Abe's Odyssey just was not that thing for me for some reason.
I mean, I'm not surprised, to be honest, my man. I think it was, even back in the day, I think it was a very niche title. I don't think it was a very well-known title at all. It definitely did well on the PS1, but like I said, because of the nature of Oddworld inhabitants and kind of what happened to them, and they kind of fell under the radar for a long time. And their games started to go in radical directions. I think a lot of people forgot about the original games. I think a lot of modern gamers or more recent gamers know them from Munch's Odyssey, the Xbox game they released way back in the day, and Stranger's Wrath, another Xbox game they released back in the day. Those games now can be played on pretty much every platform, which is fantastic to say. But originally they were locked and they were only on Xbox. They never got a PlayStation release. So a lot of people who grew up playing Abe on the PS1 could not play it again if they didn't have an Xbox, because the games were locked there. So for the longest time, the company kind of fell into obscurity. Not a lot of people knew about them, which is a great shame. I think it's one of the biggest shames for me in gaming history.
Yeah, I mean, it completely flew under my radar. It was a game that I had only ever heard of because of you. Like, you were literally the only vein I had to tap into with that.
I fly the Oddworld flag proudly and sadly sometimes. I'm very glad they made a return. Soulstorm is really good. It's not terrible. It's a bit of a departure to what we're used to. It's ambitious for sure. The original Exodus is just the original Exodus, which is the second game, and Odyssey are just, I don't know, the original ones, something about them. I think it's the age, the art style of the games. It's just mesmerizing. Like, it's just how they look is just, you can't really replicate it nowadays. I watched a thing recently, actually, and it was on horror stuff again, as per usual. Don't act surprised. and it was about PS1 games and the horror behind PS1 games. But even if the PS1 game wasn't a horror game, there was something about kind of PS1 graphics that are mesmerizing in a way. The low poly aspect, the flat lighting, the harsh tones and the harsh shades. Something about the art style for those games, even not the horror games, is weirdly kind of off-putting, but also mesmerizing. And it's something you don't get in today's high visual fidelity games, you know. It's, I don't know, you don't get that same kind of unease, I think.
Yeah, totally agree, you know, and that's the, like, there's a whole kind of indie sub-genre within horror now that is completely dedicated to demaking games into PS1 games.
It's a massive, massive thing.
It's awesome. So yeah, good.
It's so good to see. A big shout out to a group of people that get together every year. They do a thing called the Haunted PS1 Demo Disc. There's a lot of cool videos on YouTube you can check out about this, but it's super cool. You can download this for free as well off itch.io. And every year they do a new one, and a load of developers come together. And if they're making games that have that aesthetic, basically, not even necessarily horror games, some of them aren't horror games, just PS1 kind of demake games, they put them on this disc and you can play them. And it's super cool. Some of them are really fucking, really out there. There's one called Walk. I'd recommend you look at that online, Walk. I think it's just called Walk. And it is real fucking weird and creepy and really kind of just haunting. Like, ooh, I don't know. It made me really unsettled when I watched it, but it made me really want to try and play it because, yeah, you don't really do a lot in the game either. You just kind of walk. But it's got a really kind of trippy way it does its cameras, like Resi, like old Silent Hill fixed camera angle, obviously. So horrible tank controls and these kind of weird, almost like photo street photography backgrounds with this kind of grain and this horrific filter over it. It's just very strange, very strange. I feel like I'm going to link it because more people should know about that because it's haunting. But yeah, that was Abe's Odyssey. I could go on for literal hours and talk about it in this series, and I probably will. We're going to do an episode on it for sure. But next, Nate, our wonderful guest who's here, tell us your second game, please, sir. What is this game?
We are... this company, for all they may have, like, you know, fumbled on in recent years, I've got to stay in the BioWare field now. It's one of the Mass Effect games. Can you guys guess which one it is that I'm going to pick?
It's not Andromeda, is it?
No, it's not Andromeda. So I will defend Andromeda in this regard. Okay. My housemate suggested to me, go back and play it after all the bug fixes. It has great combat. It actually has, like, the verticality aspect. The narrative is the weakest. Going to give it that.
Sure.
But I do think, like, it had amazing combat.
I mean, I will be the first to say that gamers do be gamers, right? And I obviously the game was a bit iffy when it came out, but I don't think it deserved the level of hate and the level of abuse the game got at all.
Yeah, okay. So, right. So, between 1 and 3, what do you think I'm going for? Because they're all good. They're
I'm
all amazing.
It's 2. I'm hoping you're going to pick
it's
2.
It's not 2.
I would have picked 2.
I'm actually going, controversially here, I'm going for 3.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay, but I know,
also,
Understandable up until the end.
That's where I'm going with this.
Game up until the end, yeah.
So, yeah, literally,
I would have gone with 2 as well, but I want to see where you're going with this. Mm. Please,
so
control me.
The game is about 30 hours long, not normal playthrough. You're looking at the last 10-15 minutes of a game of a massive campaign sprawling playthrough where all these narratives are interweaving straight from the first game. For example, the Rachni Queen, you know, interactions in the first game, coming back in the third game, you know, aiding your character. This is a conclusion for this character throughout the entire trilogy. And, you know, from literally starting off as checking a signal on Eden Prime to literally saving the galaxy, you know, and I could have done without, like, the whole trying to run after the boy in the forest type thing, which I never truly understood. But outside of that, I think, like, you know, building these relationships in this entire series, I think in game trilogies, this is one of the best game trilogies ever, in my opinion, because, you know, I replayed the Legendary Edition when it came out early last year, and even playing it then, you know, having knowing all these characters and knowing the fates they're going to have, you know, still brings a tear to my eye. All I have to say is laboratory, you know, explosion. That sort of, you know, that did bring a tear to my eye again, you know, replaying it. I knew what was going to happen, but going into this game, I felt that it was a extremely strong conclusion to the series. Again, the ending, the fact that they did add, they did go through and add a new version of an ending, which I was still iffy with at the time when I played it back in the day, but up to that point, loved it. I think the fact that, you know, also I never played the Citadel DLC until Legendary Edition, which is really frustrating because that DLC is amazing. Also, I am a Liara stan. That's who I picked in the end for my romance aspect. I don't know. I just think
I like Liara as well. I'm going to add to that. Yeah, she's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm a fan.
Exactly.
I'm not a hater.
No, of course not. And, you know, the fact that, like, you know, it was an ever-evolving version of the combat. So Mass Effect 1 has the best story, in a lot of people's opinion. Mass Effect 3 has the best combat in that trilogy because it was an ever-evolving. They changed it up from 2. Obviously, the big aspect of 2 was the suicide mission. You know, some people might not come back from this. I'm not going to lie. I made sure that everyone survived that mission. I was like, no one is getting left behind in this regard. But I don't know. I just also the music, just leaving Earth at the beginning of that game, like, you know, seeing the desperation, the fact that Shepard lost at the start of that game, he's having to run away to build this army. And when that eventual army comes in near the end, it's just stunning piece of, it is Star Wars level, like, you know, cinematics in that regard, massive space battles. I'm not gonna lie, it kind of reminded me of the Firefly Serenity film space battle at the end there as well. Like, but this is reason why it's my, you know, one of my favorite games of all time.
It has it's kind of a space opera quality to it, doesn't it?
Oh, very much so, you know, and the fact that, you know, this platform that you were fighting Sarasan and Mass Effect 1 turned out as the entire key to the entire trilogy the entire time, you know, I think was a great roundabout way of going about it. And, you know, that, you know, you do a charge near the end, which I thought was a stunning piece of video game culture, in my opinion. Like, you know, it's this 1 minute thing and these emotional send-offs you give to these characters. Still don't know what happened at the end of this game, not gonna lie. I, you know, certain people's fates. Also, I swear to God, I think Shepard, it will be in the next one. I think that will happen. But yeah, this is why, reason why I put Mass Effect like in my top video games of all time, to be honest, but 3 specifically.
I will say it's an ambitious pick going for 3, obviously. There's a lot of controversy around 3, a lot of controversy about the ending, but I do get what you mean. People do obviously judge it quite heavily because of the ending. And I think the only reason they do that is because obviously BioWare have done such a fantastic job of keeping these games interlinked. You know, you said about how many story threads kind of come back center, and it's really fucking impressive, you know. Like story threads from the first game, which was so old at that point, it was pretty old, right? To the second one, to the third one, they had maintained these choices that had carried over between them, you know. It's incredible to see that BioWare kept that level of detail and fidelity within their, you know, within their products.
I mean, the fact that, you know, you could literally transfer your character save files over from Mass Effect 2 and certain characters would still be dead from 2.
Exactly, yeah. Like that's fantastic use of that RPG, that living world. And it you know, it makes sure that if you want to be totally accurate, your repercussions can follow you through multiple games, you know. Multiple games to remind you how bad you fucked up.
Yeah, I think you made an extremely compelling point and an argument for Mass Effect 3 there, to be honest. Me personally, I've always played FemShep, so Jennifer Hale, perfect. She did a great, she nailed that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like the kind of everything leading up to the finale of 3 is really good. Like that space battle, yeah, that is a space battle to rival Star Wars easily. Yeah, when the fleet that you have amassed is going toe to toe with the Reapers at the end, that is truly like hair raising stuff. It is.
And the fact that, you know, you are literally going around the galaxy also collecting resources, you know, making diplomatic alliances, and then the cinematics would change in accordance to how much of the fleet you are bringing to Earth at that point. And, you know, it says you've reached the maximum capacity for the fleet, you know, and I made sure I bloody did that. The Reapers were not having it at that point. We can swear on this podcast, right, if I'm right?
You can swear on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Those bastards were going down, my man. Those bastards were going down.
Yeah, bastard's not a swear. That's all right. That's absolutely fine. We have said far worse.
we shall say worse still.
Yeah. I say we. It's mostly Connor.
I do swear.
He's a proper potty mouth, mate.
I know this.
A little bit of a potty mouth.
But yeah, no, I think cracking point about Mass Effect 3, actually. You've almost made me reconsider, and I kind of feel like I want to go back and play them all again now.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, we had Teresa Hive, I can't remember how she pronounced her name, Edie, in the game. You know, the fact she got a body, she could become a literal part of your crew in the third game. I thought that was an excellent addition as well. And, you know, I don't know, I just think it's such a perfect game. And, you know, they added, like, you know, the fact that, you know, in the previous games, you'd have to go into cover to come over it. But adding a simple mechanic of literally just leaping over as you're running, adding that extra tension to the game. And also, you know, the added element of Cerberus being an entirely separate enemy in that entire game, I thought was an added bonus as well. You know, you were literally fighting the Reapers up until this point, but making Shepard's mission more difficult, having to fight the people who brought him back to life. And also after the same, you know, after going against you as well, I think it's an amazing thing to have in a game.
I also really like the multiplayer in Mass Effect 3
That was
a great addition to the game, actually.
It was one of the ones actually done quite well. I like to attribute the multiplayer from Mass Effect sort of coming at it like the Dead Space 1 did, but they did a really good job of it, whereas the Dead Space 1 did not do a good job of it. You know, I think that's the kind of vein I thought about it when I first saw it, because I was like, oh, here we go. We've got another single-player game that's trying to do multiplayer. And they're going to just completely balls it up, you know, like so many have done before, because Dead Space 2's multiplayer was jank to hell. It was kind of fun for a little while. I think we said this before, right? But it really wasn't playable long term.
Should have done what they did with Mass Effect and had it as like a wave based objective
100%
game, right? Yeah. That in Dead Space 2, that would have made that game. That have made it.
I totally agree with you, man. That would have really, really made that. But BioWare, they did such a good fucking job of their one. I was really impressed with it, for sure. I actually really wanted to play Mass Effect again recently with the Legendary Edition that came out.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they call the remakes version. I say remakes, remaster. It's not really a remake, is it, per se?
Good Steam Deck game, maybe?
If it's verified, that would be a fantastic Steam Deck game, actually, yeah. That'd be one to lose yourself.
Get it on Steam, so
There's potential there then, for sure. Like I find myself doing this all the time with the Steam Deck now, but I'm like, I see a game on Steam and I'm like, oh, you know what, it's fucking Steam Deck, that, yeah, that's cracking, you know. We get it on the Steam Deck, we'll play it, and every time I see new games come out for the Steam, I'm always like, oh, there's a Steam Deck, you know. Like when we were sat on holiday, Zach, and Silent Hill 2 remake trailer came out, and we were like, oh, it's on Steam. Deck.
It was literally, we were sat there having dinner and we were just like, Steam Deck. We said it exactly the same time.
Steam Deck, man. Literally. Steam Deck.
Honestly, like the fact that you know, going off of Red Dead again, I've got the Ultimate Edition on my Epic Store, which is really frustrating because I'm like, do I buy it again for Steam just so I can play it on my Steam Deck?
I'm having this actual problem right now, to be fair, with mine. I know there's a very easy way and a way to get Epic Games on the Steam Deck. I'm kind of lazy; I haven't done it yet.
Same.
But I have been tempted to rebuy Control again because I'm kind of really close to finishing Control, and I'm not gonna lie, Control's a banging game. As well, I want to talk about that on the podcast at some point, but I'm having a lot of fun with Control. If you like weird supernatural thriller SCP kind of stuff, Twin Peaks, yeah, that kind of style, SCP era kind of content, Control is a banging game. And also Remedy are really good as well. Alan Wake, shout out. I really, really am tempted to buy it on Steam just to play it on the deck really easily. But I'm like, oh, I could just put the Epic launcher on there. I could do it that way. But yeah, I'm having the exact same problem as you are, my man. I was very tempted to buy Control during the Halloween sale. I didn't do it, but I worry the Christmas sale, I might be weak. I might buy it again. Because
buy
I know
it again. Do it. Because at least, you know, if it makes you feel any better, you still won't have more copies than I will of Resident Evil 4. Okay, so
that is true, Nate. You sit in, or I say you sit in front of, you sit in front of a screen looking at a man that owns a lot of copies of Resident Evil 4. A lot of copies of Resident Evil 4, and has played Resident Evil 4 I think more times than I know. I don't think anyone else has played Resident Evil 4
been a fool. Times like...
I did replay it again recently, to be honest. Like after the 4 got remake, I announced with Ten and Connor this before, I doubt someone created over 8 years a HD mod remaster of the entire game, 36 gigabyte size, and I was like, no, I've got to go in, got to fight my Salazar again and everything, you know, got to do that. And yeah, no, and sad about the dog in the remake from what I've seen, a bit sad about that, but yeah, no, I can't wait to play that.
our opinion. Oh yeah, no, we are. In our last episode, we spoke to great lengths about our love for the Resi announcement and how we're going to play the fuck out of that when it comes out. And we're going to talk the hell about it as well. We're going to talk to the ends of the earth about that game and the Silent Hill 2 remake as well. It's interesting you said that about It's interesting you said about the Resi 4 like enhanced type edition type fan thing. Silent Hill 2 actually has something very similar to that. Which is like a Silent Hill 2 Enhanced Edition, which is like a fan-made, fan-produced upscale, basically, of the game, which is actually reasonably well done. You know, it's not obviously remake territory in any way, shape, or form, but it does make the game look a bit more impressive.
Again, you know, as Connor knows, I've never played a Silent Hill game, so I can't wait for this remake to come out so I can finally give it a go. So
yes, yeah. Yes, man. To be fair, I think it's totally fine, right? Because I've said this on the podcast before. I never really played Resi 2 back in the day on the PS1. I never really played it. I played it since, but I never really played it. And Resi 2 Remake, when I played that, I fell in absolute love with it. And I went back, I played the originals again. It completely got its claws in me. And that's what I want the Silent Hill 2 Remake to do to people like you, Nate, who have never played Silent Hill before. You're going to experience it for the first time. And you're going to be like, that was incredible. I can't wait to go back. Or you're going to be like, that was terrible. I don't want to play this ever again.
I mean, I'll just play it and, you know, you'll just see Connor appear behind my back like, is it good, Nate? You're loving it, Nate.
Are you shitting yourself yet, Nate? are you pooing yourself when Big Daddy Pyramid Head comes?
Got my wipes ready.
don't bother with the wipes, man. Just wear the rubber pants.
That's the best way to be.
That just reminded me of the pants from the Outlast pants they made. The Outlast adult nappy.
Oh man, that's
but a fantastic bait, Nate. Mass Effect is truly truly a gaming icon. Icon.
I know everyone will go for two, but three has always just been like above it for me, and I will defend it to the end of my days. I do not care what anyone thinks.
No, it is very valid. It is a valid defense, man. You gave a very compelling argument for it as well.
Well, thank you.
So, Zach, my man, your second game, please.
Yes, of course. I thought I'd put something in, you know, our obligatory Capcom agreement, you know. So
get it in.
We've already mentioned a bit of Resident Evil 4 there, so we snuck that one in there. But my second pick for today is none other than Dead Rising. So I am a big fan of this game series in general. I've always liked Dead Rising. But this was the first game I ever played on 360. It was my first Xbox 360 game that I owned. And it's great. It's such fun. Like, aside from the story, you know, you can play things as seriously as you want, or you can go completely the other end of the spectrum and you can go wild. You know, you can you're playing as a photojournalist who's been heli dropped into a shopping mall full of zombies, and you've got 72 hours to chop till you drop, I think is the tagline that they use for the game. You got 72 hours to try and make it out alive with the story, to figure out what's happened in this little town of Willamette. And like I said, you can go as crazy as you want. You know, you can wear a nice summer dress if you want and run around beating zombies to death with their own arms. You know, it literally the game just goes balls to the wall with the craziness. And it's just one of the most memorable games I think I've played, you know. Heavily, heavily rooted in inspiration by George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead, even though it makes an effort on the box art of saying that it's not associated in any way, shape, or form with George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
Hilarious. Got to paraphrase that. Despite being set in a very similar environment with very similar things that go on, it is not, in fact, a parody or a reference. Well, a parody, probably. A reference, apparently not.
But that's it, yeah. I think Capcom, to avoid any ensuing lawsuits, made it very, very clear on the box art. Got nothing to do with George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead. Just to cover their asses, I think.
It's interesting, the need to have to put that on your box cover as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know? But everybody sees zombies in shopping malls, puts one and one together, and comes out with George A. Romero, don't they? It's just, it's natural. It's only natural.
Quintessential.
Exactly. And the game, what makes it so unique, it's just how wacky it can be. You know, you have a wide assortment of weapons at your disposal, anything that you could find in a shopping mall, you know, a wooden bench, I don't know, a mannequin, as like I said, a zombie's arm, katanas, anything. There's a gun shop in the mall, and you've just got to go around and you, it, you go around at your own leisure, really. You've got a time limit, obviously, but you can choose whether you want to uncover the truth or whether you just want to run around chopping zombies up in your underpants. Like, it's completely your choice.
The whole time angle was always an interesting take for me when I first played Dead Rising, because when I first played it, I actually didn't like it at all. I thought it was like a bit of a frustrating mechanic, really. I was like, oh, fucking kill zombies forever, man. That kind of stuff. But it does have a very interesting kind of way it wraps in with the plot. And it is something they obviously tie into the future games as well, right? They do it in 2 quite heavily, don't they, as well? And 2, I actually like 2 quite a lot. I played 2 a lot because it actually came to the PlayStation back in the day. Whereas the first one didn't go to PlayStation first, like it was on Xbox only, right? So I never really got a chance to play about not being an Xbox boy, unless I played it with you. So the second one I actually quite liked a lot because I got to play it. But that had a very similar thing where you had to obviously take the Zombrex doses every other hour or you know, you die. That time-based mechanic.
And as the series progressed, obviously they added more features into the game. Like you've mentioned 2 there, that had cooperative, so you could play with a friend. That wasn't in the first one, you know. So as the series went on, and I'll discuss that a little bit more detail in a minute. But they just kept adding to the game. There were lots of things again that made the first one unique as well. I really love the main character Frank West. I think he's fantastic because he's kind of this morally ambiguous character. He's kind of definitely selfish and out for himself at the end of the day. But you can kind of make decisions as you go through the game that kind of make him kind of a good guy at heart. So you can save survivors from the mall, get them back to the security room and save them from the zombies. Or you can just leave them, you know, and do what you got to do to get through the story. And the game kind of, especially the first time around, you don't really have the time to dally, to dilly-dally, because you've got that time limit and it's hard to get through the waves of zombies just because you're quite a low level. You don't have many, kind of abilities at your disposal. You don't have a lot of health and so on and so forth. But what a really good way of obviously getting those points is through the photography mechanic in the game, because you're playing as a photojournalist. You have the ability to capture action shots and earn experience off the back of that, which is really interesting. I think that's quite a unique concept. There are other games that have done, you know, segments where you're capturing things on camera, but I like the fact that there's a grading system for the type of shot that you've got, and you can get horror pictures and action and brutality, and there's even an erotica one as well, which I thought was a
ooh la la.
There are a couple of opportunities for you to get some saucy shots in the game. Nothing too crude, but
nothing too raunchy.
No, but it's just dumb fun, and I think that's why I like it. Nate, have you ever played Dead Rising?
I mean, you know, going off the crude thing, the dead were definitely rising at that point, let's say. Honestly,
my man, that was nice.
Honestly, Dead Rising was the first game I actually played on my Xbox 360 as well. Like, you know, it was that and Halo. Those were the 2 games I had. I see it as a comparison to Saints Row to a degree. Like, Saints Row had this like really wacky aspect of like the amount of weapons you can have, whereas having the zombie element, I thought, you know, again, the whole George A. Romero aspect was hilarious. Like, this isn't a George A. Romero game. It's in a mall. Of course it bloody is. But also the sheer scale of zombies on the screen as well was never seen before. You know, it was always, you know, I take to the point of like thinking about the Evil Dead game back in the day. And like, you know, it was very limited characters on screen. You could fight a Resident Evil, you know, even Resident Evil 2 or 4 even back in the day had a limited amount of, infected on screen at once. But Dead Rising came in and was like, hell no, let's put all the zombies on the screen. And it was just a stunning piece of video games. It really was, to be honest.
The whole zombie thing, I think, always really good, like you said, Nate, and how many zombies there were in Dead Rising. I think that was always a massive selling point for the game, right? Is it's like, look how many zombies are on the screen. Look how many zombies you can interact with and do stuff with. And obviously we have games now, right, that have come, like World War Z and Days Gone, right? Days Gone, yeah, which is big old zombie romp stomp fest. But I think Dead Rising really paved the way for those games to use that kind of look at all these zombies on the screen. Dead Rising was the first one I remember playing, and I was like, damn, there's a lot of fucking zombies here, man. And you kind of fight your way through it, and it's like, I'm just going to keep on chopping my way through zombies until the day's over. Like with Dead Rising 2, such a satisfying game to get like the weapon combination thing. Like that was an awesome mechanic, right? It wasn't in the first one, was it?
No, that's it. No. So yeah, like the first one was very bare bones. And that's something, again, something else I was going to mention, you know, 2, like you said, had brought in combo weapons, cooperative play. you know, Dead Rising 3 went even a step further with combo vehicles. So you could combine vehicles that you found around in the environment. Like we've played a bit of Dead Rising 3 co-op together, haven't we, Connor? And yep. Like the roller hog is possibly one of my favorite things in a game ever. Like a motorcycle with a steamroller front on it. Like just that's awesome.
It gets the job done rather efficiently.
Yeah.
I was always a fan of the dual wheeled chainsaws. Double-ended chainsaw with this. You had the
paddle saw,
yeah,
right?
You had the two saws each side of the paddle, and yeah, you just like yeah. just spin it through like fucking Darth Maul, mate. Just cutting zombies down. It was insane. I was like, oh my god, dude, this fucking it's lit.
you could say it's sort of like Maul of the Fates.
Oh, Maul of the Fates, exactly. it was a satisfying way to take out zombies. This guy, Nate loves himself a pun, man. He's a damn very right, punny yeah. guy. His podcast yeah. is just full of puns, everyone. You'll check that out if you like a pun.
I love that. That's fantastic.
That is a fantastic pick, my man. Dead Rising is an incredible series. Like you said, it's a series that it's got a very big pedigree in the zombie genre, the zombie video game genre, and it is a series that has gone on and advanced as kind of time's gone along. Like you can really see the difference between the games. The first one obviously very rudimentary. The second one introduces, you know, weapon combos and that kind of stuff, flirts with vehicles a little bit. The third one goes big with vehicles. You know, you can get lot more vehicles in that game. So it's like you really do see that progression from the first one to the second one to the third one and so on and so forth. Would be interesting to see Dead Rising in the RE engine, you know.
I would love to see Dead Rising in the RE engine. Yeah, Dead Rising 4 fell a bit flat for a lot of people. It's very, very, it's very divisive, that game. Some people are like, "Yeah, it's dumb fun," and other people are like, "Man, the story, what was that? Like, it was wild." The
story was jacked, yo.
Yeah, so like, there's definitely a divide in the fan base for the last Dead Rising. So I don't know. Like, Capcom haven't shown any intentions of doing any more Dead Rising games, to my knowledge.
Could you say, like, with the recent Saints Row game, how they tried to reboot that? It could have been a cautionary tale for Capcom in that regard, because it's in the similar vein.
Capcom aren't known for reading the writing on the wall, though, as we've seen with their multiplayer. So, I don't know.
Re-verse?
Oh, God, I can't believe that's still coming out.
Re-verse. Coming out. It's out now, my man. Oh.
It's out. And
you can play it. And I've been tempted to download it for the lulz, and I still haven't done it.
As expected, the player base is already dead on it.
Well, the player base, ironically, is quite useful, because if you bought Village, you got a free copy of it. So, so technically, the player base is massive, because it's as many people that bought Village have a copy of that game. And Village sold very well.
People are actually bothering to log into that game.
Oh, yeah,
to download
different story.
It, right?
Yeah, different story. People that have access to the game versus people playing the game, very different things. I have access to the game. I'm not playing the game. Observe.
There's no incentive for people. I've seen some
streams. I won't lie, it does look a little bit fun, but at the same time, it just, I don't know, man. If I wanted to have that experience and hate myself that much, I'd play Dead by Daylight, to be fair. And at least then I'll be flagellating myself, but I'll be enjoying it a bit more than I would be with that game. Because it is a tried and tested formula, but that is what it feels like. You know, and Dead by Daylight on a bad day doesn't feel great. So this game, I don't see this game really improving on that. You know, on that remedy, mate.
No, but at least, you know, at least we've got Dead Rising, and Dead Rising's fun. You know,
exactly. But I would love to see Dead Rising in the RE engine, because we talk about the RE engine so much on this podcast, right? And how good it is, and how much it's done for Capcom in general. Because, dude, there's so many games now that use the RE engine. You know, we've had not just Resident Evil, we've seen it on Monster Hunter, we've seen it on Devil May Cry. Now,
Street Fighter's
using it as well. Yeah. And what I think is beautiful about it is those are three very different games making use of this engine and pushing it to its extremes in that game. We got a fighting game, we got a hack and slash game, we got a fucking survival horror game, you know, we got Monster Hunter, which is a bizarre kind of RPG-esque
open world
JRPG-esque kind of game. You know, three games there that are staggeringly different from each other, all making use of this engine. So it'd be really interesting to see Dead Rising take that on.
All I'm saying is that with this whole Capcom thing, I don't know if you guys spoke about it in your episode, but I haven't listed that yet. They need to bring a certain franchise back, and I'm really frustrated that it isn't back yet.
Are you going to say what I think you're going to say here?
Oh, yes. Snappy, Snappy, my boy. We need those dinosaurs back, man. We need the Dino Crisis series back.
Dino Crisis.
Dino Crisis, man.
Dino Crisis is such a meme at this point, though, isn't it? It's such a meme. Like the OG games are great, but like the amount of people, and you are not alone, my friend, with wanting Dino Crisis to come back, right? Because it is like, you know that meme where it's like the mother and she's holding her child up in the pool, and then there's the other one like drowning in the corner, right?
Yeah.
That is basically like Resident Evil and Dino Crisis, right? Dino Crisis is the drowning child in that situation.
I mean, the fact that, you know, everyone saw like Capcom Showcase, and there was as soon as dinosaurs appeared on screen, everyone lost their fucking mind.
Yeah.
And then the realization came in, and then everyone went, "What the fuck?
What is this game?"
That was the biggest mic drop. That was like the equivalent of like, you know, the Sailor Moon meme where it's like, "You've done nothing," and he's like, "My work here is done," and he like puts his cape over and like runs away. That was Capcom at that moment, because everyone was like, "Oh shit, boys, dinosaurs, Dino Crisis." It's not Dino Crisis. Everyone's like, "What is this?" And they're like, "Nah, my work here is done. New dinosaur game. You asked for a new dinosaur game, you got it." You didn't specify it had to be Dino Crisis. It was just a dinosaur game.
Oh, man.
One of the biggest trolls I think I've seen in my time.
Yeah, definitely.
It did not feel good. We'll have to do an episode covering dinosaur games.
Yeah, I feel your pain, right? I'm still waiting for Capcom to do another Resident Evil Outbreak game. The fans are crying out for it. It still hasn't happened. You know, we've had a string of unsuccessful multiplayer games when they could have just done Outbreak. It's a co-op game. It works.
I think they're going to wait for The Last of Us multiplayer to come out. That could be a thing. Like, you know, see how that plays out. And then if there's a hankering for it, then they'll give it a go.
I mean, I also think that you want the Code Veronica remake there, don't you, Zach, as well?
Do you know what? I could live without a Code Veronica remake if I had the Outbreak.
Okay.
If I had another Outbreak game or a remake, remaster, whatever they want to do, we just need the Outbreak games, but with working multiplayer officially. That would be fine. They could give me the same game, same graphics, but just make the servers work, and I will be happy.
I liked Operation Raccoon City, actually.
Yeah, see, that had its good points. Like, overall... Mm. Mediocre, but there were some great points that
I liked the Umbrella agents in that game.
Yeah, they're great.
They were cool as fuck.
As a outsider, people, you know, it's never a Miss Emmanuel episode with a lot of Capcom talk.
It is true. We are talking about Resident Evil again now. Right, thank you so much, Zach, for talking.
Unapologetic
about Dead Rising. I'm gonna drop my last title before we close off here, and that is actually a game I absolutely adore. We have spoken about it very briefly once before, once or twice before, and that is the original OG BioShock game, just BioShock 1, and. Yeah, if you're familiar with games, if you know games, you probably have seen or played BioShock before. It is a legendary FPS action, dark, horror-esque game, I guess. I describe it as a horror game, in a way, that came out many, many moons ago now, way back in 2007. Oh, good lord. The original came back in 2007 on Xbox 360 at first, and then eventually ported itself to other consoles. And I played it on the PS3 to begin with way back in the day. And it is now a game, once again, sort of like Resident Evil, and those games that you can play on pretty much every platform now. Thanks to the remaster edition that came out a few years ago, you can play it on Steam. You can play it on Epic. You can play it on every platform. Yeah, and the original BioShock, it just, I don't know, it hit me really, really just well. It was such an engrossing game. The storyline, sort of like you said with Red Dead, Zach, was very engrossing. You definitely brought up a relationship with the character Jack, even though Jack doesn't actually speak or really do anything kind of note. He does speak in the game, but not really that much. He speaks at the opening pretty much, and that's it. Sort of suffers a bit from Isaac syndrome from Dead Space 1, really, in that you build up a very engrossing relationship with a character that doesn't actually say anything, really, which is quite impressive. But the game itself is just really interesting. It takes you to the mythical underwater city known as Rapture, which is a city that was basically built with freedom in mind, where someone could pursue whatever they wanted to pursue. And you playing as Jack end up crash landing near a massive lighthouse. And you end up going into Rapture accidentally in an attempt to get away from the plane as it burns. And what can only be described as a absolutely mind-bending, drug-induced horror trip in furrows beneath Rapture as you go through the archaic cities and the streets. And, you know, you see the once kind of noble city just rotting away and falling to pieces. And I think Rapture is one of probably the best kind of designed city kind of scapes in games. Because it's so unique. it takes that kind of that hidden Lost City of Atlantis kind of vibe and cranks it up to 11 and modernizes it. And it's just fantastic. You can, you know, I found myself getting lost in the first Bioshock game for hours, and I've been a fan of the whole series. I think the whole series is very good too. Was also really good, even though it gets a bit of flack. And Infinite was also fantastic as well. Obviously, at that point, the storyline does take a bit of a departure. I'm not going to lie, it kind of goes in fucking places. But just following the first game I think has a really cohesive storyline. And if you would only play one game, I think you could play the first game and you get a fantastic experience, regardless of you playing any of the other games in the series. Because if you played Infinite and you get to Infinite, you know what I mean? The storyline takes a fucking, it's like a straight line and it goes up and down and up and down. And when it gets to Infinite, it just starts going, and it just starts freaking out. Like the narrative plot just goes fucking in loop-de-loop, circles, spins.
Like the rails.
Literally on the rails as well with the whole skyhook. Yeah, that's fucking nice. but in its core, the first Bioshock game, I think, is a feat of fantastic storytelling. You know, you really get engrossed in the world. It's sort of the actual theming for the game is sort of industrial, very kind of biological,
steampunky. Well.
I think the Wikipedia page calls it biopunk, is the style, biological punk. Obviously, a big kind of aspect of this game is these powers you can accumulate as you play the game, and these are called plasmids. And these were created as a direct result of Rapture being such a free city. And these plasmids can do horrific things to your body, but give you such intense powers. And they are primarily your ally, but also your adversary as well, because the main enemy in the game, a group of people called the Splicers, are people that have basically fucked around with these plasmids to the extent where it is completely eroded and kind of corroded their minds and their bodies, and they've turned into almost zombie-esque kind of creatures, really, that are reliant on this stuff to keep them going. And it's quite horrifying at points. I don't know if you boys have played Bioshock or if you have any thoughts on kind of the atmosphere of that game, but it's quite haunting in places, isn't it?
Oh yes,
I definitely think the technology, you know, the technological marvel of like the water physics in that game were astounding for what Bioshock did in the day back in the day as well. And for us having such a deep narrative, I think definitely played well. I definitely agree with you. Infinite did go a little loop-de-loop in regards to its narrative towards the end. But
it went fucking off the rails.
Literally.
And it went off the chain at the end.
But yeah, no, the first one is still such an astounding game, and I can't wait to see where the next one is going to go.
Yes, you are correct. There is a new Bioshock game coming out. That's been in development for a little while now. I'm really interested to see how that takes on, because the ending to Infinite sort of, I don't want to spoil it, but it sort of implies the existence of many worlds, basically, that can exist within sort of the Bioshock kind of universe, and many instances of kind of these cities like Rapture that exist, but are maybe not Rapture, but have the same kind of ethos as Rapture does.
Yeah, it's wild. It literally, like, Infinite ends up becoming like Bioshock Multiverse of Madness, doesn't it? Right, it opens that whole can of worms, and
100%, yeah,
there's no going back from that point.
No, it very much kind of goes off the edge. And Infinite did have two DLCs they released at the end called The Burial at Sea, Part 1 and Part 2. Really good DLCs, and those really tie to the first game, first Bioshock, quite heavily, and also quite nice actually as well. It sort of canonizes the good ending in Bioshock 1, which is really nice. Because you don't get that kind of canonization when you first play it, even though a good ending is really nice in the game. It's nice that they canonize that ending fully with Burial at Sea.
I know, saying like Multiverse of Madness, actually loop it back, I do think Sam Raimi would be an amazing director to do the Bioshock movie if they eventually did it. I think he would be the perfect choice, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
100%, yeah. Like, I feel like
there's only one other person that I think on this planet that would be able to capture that vision. And take it and run with it, and that would probably be Guillermo del Toro.
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah, you are either highly correct there.
Yeah,
I think del Toro would have an absolute play date with the characters in Bioshock, and obviously the big boy himself, the big daddy, which I didn't touch on, but the big daddies are also a creature in this game that exists, and they are these sort of people that are in extremely large, ye old kind of Victorian diving suits, but kind of cranked up to 11 with big old drill hands, and these guys protect these little girls called the Little Sisters, and to make a long story short, it's the little sister's job is basically to collect the things that make plasmids and create, you know, the genetic code the spices so desperately crave. And the Big Daddies are sort of made as a guardian of them and to protect them. And the Big Daddies are no joke. They are fucking tough enemies. They are a piece of piss. You play it on easy, but you start cranking that difficulty up ever so slightly. I've completed Bioshock 1 quite a few times now. It's not Resident Evil 4 levels for you, Zach, but I've played it a good maybe 8-10 times now through to completion. And on the hard difficulties, yeah, the Big Daddies are no joke, dude. They slap the hell out of you. They will slap you silly if you don't play well against them. You don't know your combos. They will just come up and they will backhand you across the room, and it hurts. Yeah. It really hurts.
You got to stock up on that armor-piercing ammo. Like, it's imperative. You need the right ammo. You need the right circumstance. A little dash of luck as well. That always helps.
A lot of prayer. A lot of praying.
If you can get enemies to fight each other, that's a great one as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to use everything, because that's the great thing about Bioshock as well. It's also the environment and how you can use that against your opponents and other opponents against each other. Like, there's plasmids where you can turn the Big Daddy into your bodyguard for a short period of time, or you can enrage enemies to fight each other. There's so many different ways that you can play that game. So I feel like even just like the combination of plasmids that you use can completely... It almost feels like a completely different playthrough.
It does 100%, man. And I think what is really kind of hard about the first one as well is that it uses the old controller scheme and the old combat style, where you could only have a gun out at once or a plasmid out at once, and you had to switch between the two. Whereas in Infinite and within 2, it changed, so you could have a gun in one hand and a plasmid in the other hand. And that was a huge change for the franchise, because it made gunplay a lot faster, whereas the first one is a lot more slower, and it relies on you kind of stopping and going, oh, I'm going to change my plasmid, and I've got to quickly change menu and quickly change my gun. And it is, in a sense, a bit of a downgrade to what they did, but I think it complements the game style and the gameplay of 1 really nicely.
Yeah, definitely a lot more intense, because you've got that menu surfing to do and stuff like that. You're like, oh, shit, I better hurry. You know, it adds, there's an extra layer of tension on there as well, right? That definitely is tangible. You can feel it, can't you? You know,
completely. You can feel that that tension as you try to reach for your gun really quickly, or try to get that plasmid out you need just in time, right? Like, you see water, for example, you get the you get your electric plasmid out, and you're like, boom, quickly zap the water, that kind of thing. You got to react to how the environment kind of plays. And it's interesting, actually, Nate, what you said about the water. That's so true. Like, the water effects in that game looked fantastic. And for 2007 as well, like, this was a 2007 game, right? Xbox 360 era, PS3 era game. It looked fantastically good for its time.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And obviously, you know, speaking majorly about, you know, how difficult the Big Daddies were in Bioshock 1, flipping it over to Bioshock 2, where the roles are reversed in that regard, you literally go into that aspect and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. There is like a Big Daddy kind of segment in the first game, but it's not really kind of accurate or true. But the second one, obviously, you do play as a Big Daddy. You play as a special kind of Big Daddy called Doubter. And it's an interesting storyline, because ironically we were talking about single player games that did multiplayer. It's quite funny because Bioshock 2 did that as well. Yeah. Bioshock 2 tried to do the multiplayer single player route, and to be honest, actually, the multiplayer for that game wasn't too bad. It died, it fell like a lead balloon, obviously, but I actually had a lot of fun with that when I first played it. But it very much reminds me of that Mass Effect. It reminds me of that Dead Space. It was a weird era, I think, where single player games tried to include multiplayer sections in their games. I think Uncharted obviously did that as well, didn't they? Like, those games, for some reason, game developers at that time couldn't be content with making these good single player games. They had to do some kind of multiplayer element alongside it, even though the single player games were still fantastic, you know, because Dead Space 2, right, the single player version of the game is still fantastic. It just the multiplayer was shit.
I think, yeah, and a lot of developers, I think, these days have had a bit of a reality check, haven't they, with the whole including multiplayer, and now they realize that it's not a necessity, is it? It doesn't need to have multiplayer. Some developers, on the other hand, have gone the other way, and they're like, well, we don't need a single player. You know, you look at Call of Duty now, right? Obviously, some of the Modern Warfare ones, they've remastered those, but they have, you know, kind of like with Warzone and stuff, they've gone hardline multiplayer because they know that's where that's what their audience wants.
But obviously, right, Nate refers to the big boy and the coming of the boy again, right? Those, you know, some of the biggest games that are still coming out nowadays are single player narrative driven experience games, right?
Yeah.
You know, you only have to look at God of War, all of the God of War games, to be fair, right? And you'll see just how good those games are. And they're pure story driven games with little to no multiplayer involvement, right?
This is where Xbox, I think, like even Phil Spencer said, you know, first party titles, you know, they need those bigger titles because PlayStation, that's where they are king at the moment, like the narrative driven single player games.
Yeah, man.
Xbox will get there, but I think Starfield will be their first big one.
But Starfield's going to be massive, yeah.
Yeah, no, you are right in that regard.
Like you said about PlayStation, it's something we touched on, to be fair, when we spoke about the history of the PS2 in our big three-part series. And we said about how, you know, Sony for the longest time now, and for two generations almost, have completely cornered the narrative, big, super large game market, right? I can sit here and rattle off absolute bangers, right? God of War, Last of Us, Uncharted, you know, these are Bloodborne. These are all huge single-player PlayStation only experiences you can't experience anywhere else. Obviously now they're coming onto PC, which is fantastic. Spider-Man, there's another one, you know, like
I mean, going off of, you know, a game series that kind of, you know, fills it out there with Killzone, switching from the gray and brown of Killzone to the most luscious green of Horizon, you know?
Yeah, literally, dude, that was a mad switch up, right, from Killzone to Horizon. That was such a jump. And but that's another one, right? Horizon, another single player narrative heavy experience game that's just dominating, you know. And a lot of the games we've said tonight, I think all have that single player element in mind, don't they? I don't think anyone today has actually said a game that isn't heavily single player in that regard, right? They may have flirted with multiplayer, but primarily I think every game we've spoke about is a single player narrative experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's quite poignant and quite a thing to think about, you know, especially with the state of the industry now and kind of what games are coming out and stuff like that. I think that, you know, you just can't beat that single player experience game, because for me, like I said with Abe, when I first played it, it was almost like it was the first game that made me go, damn, you know, this is like a movie, but I'm playing a movie. You know, I think that's how interactive media should feel, right?
I will say, like, you know, I think it's the AA studios that are really coming up in regards to like the narrative games, because obviously I am a massive fan of the Plague Tale series that I'm going through Requiem at the moment, and yeah, I definitely think those are the studios which are definitely pushing the narrative aspect. I think maybe in 10 years time, when it comes to best video games ever, we'll be talking about those level studios who are actually, you know, pushing those games.
Yeah, I definitely think so, man. The Plague Tale series is really interesting. That's the rat one, isn't it? Rat simulator.
All my little rat friends, yes.
Are you enjoying it? Are you playing the second one now?
I mean, you know, the fact that, going into the second one, the fact that they bragged in the first one, you could have 5,000 rats on screen at once, and now they're like, and now we can have 300,000 rats on screen at once. And
so many rats.
it is a puzzle-based driven game. You know, there are action elements to it, but it's the loving narrative between the brother and the sister and everything, and like the actual in-depth design they've put into the world. It's not a open world game by any sense. It's more like an Uncharted to that degree. It does have a linear pathways in that sense, but also it's on Game Pass, so you know, both of them on Game Pass, so go check them out, people. I tried to play Scorn, can't do it. It's too, my stomach just turns at it. I have, for some reason, just can't get through it. I was very hungover, I'm not gonna lie, when I tried to play the game, it was the worst decision ever.
Oh no, dude, that's not a game you play when you're hungover, is it?
We did warn you that it was going to be weird.
Oh,
it was
a little bit spicy.
But yeah, in a Plague Tale, I highly recommend it to people. And also, they're only like 8 to 10 hour games as well. They're not long games. So they are stunning games.
Interesting stuff. Is that your current game you're playing now?
That and Gotham Knights.
Gotham Knights.
Yeah, Gotham Knights I'm currently playing through at the moment as well.
And, how are you finding Gotham Knights?
Gotham Knights is really interesting to me because like I could see what they're trying to do. Like, I really can. Like, I do think when people are giving it 4 out of 10s, no, I completely disagree with their opinion in that regard. Yeah, okay. They have removed the Arkham combat system, which I think was frustrating because they did do Origins. So it's kind of weird how they've done that. Each character you play as, you know, Red Hood, Robin, Batgirl, Nightwing, they do have all unique combat animations, which I think was very good to those characters. Red Hood, I'm the least happy with because he's very clunky, whereas the others are more acrobatic. He's very blocky in his combat, which kind of works for him. I'm a big fan of the Court of Owls narrative in Batman, though. So the fact that they're actually doing something different than the Joker, from what I know so far, you know, just expanding that narrative world. And also, you know, the first 12 minutes of the game is literally Batman's death. Like, they do an entire cinematic. It's on YouTube, people. You can check that out. But it's a stunning opening sequence of, like, you know, how he goes out. And the game is literally about who's going to take up the mantle of Batman at the end. And yeah, it's just all these like side casts. The world is gorgeous and everything. I will give him that. But there is just something to it. Like, it's definitely built as a co-op, going off of what we discussed tonight, you know, single player co-op narrative multiplayer games. A lot of the environments and designs are quite open space. Like, it feels like it's built for more than one player. And if you are playing with other people, it's found that if you go try to enter another room, you have to wait for the other player to come near you. So you have to hold A down to open a door, and it kind of gives it a sort of like someone classified it as like the best PlayStation 3 game you can play today. It's sort of like, you know, it feels like a game for that time period. But I will say,
best
at the moment,
PS3, that's a good one. That is, yeah.
I give it, well, The Last of Us was PS3. That's the thing I think.
Yeah,
about.
No, yeah, but, true.
But yeah, I give it a 6.5 out of 10 at the moment. Like, which is fine, you know. I think if it's about £20, I highly recommend checking the game out. But after that, until I complete the game and see how the narrative plays out, that could bump it up to a 7 for me, in my opinion.
Disappointing though to hear that they've removed the Arkham combat system, because arguably that's one of the best features about the Arkham games is the combat. Right, it's fluid and it flows well. So to hear that's quite disappointing. For me,
I know you're a big lover of the Arkham games, aren't you, Zach?
I'm a massive advocate for the Arkham games. Yeah, huge.
Yeah, I love the Arkham games as well.
What they could have done is literally basically you don't start off with the Arkham system because you're not Batman, but as you train up and you become more, you know, proficient in your combat style, the Arkham system seeps in a bit more. Maybe not to the huge degree Batman is, but yeah, I do think it was
I really like that idea. Yeah. I think that idea is actually really, really good, because that would reinforce the core narrative about becoming the new Batman.
Yeah.
You know, you fight like Batman as well, and you become Batman, right? The essence of Batman as like a figure rather than a person, right? Because it's like with the Batman, a lot of the Batman media, right? It's not just like Bruce Wayne, but it's like Batman as an entity. You know, that Batman is like a evangelical almost figure.
I mean, it's the fact, you know, they each have their own weapons, you know, Eskima sticks and bow staffs and everything. So they all have unique, you know, Red Hood's a gun combat expert and everything. So I do love that aspect of the game. But yeah, I definitely think, you know, maybe they can make some changes as it goes through, you know, who knows. But I'm enjoying it. You know, all the Arkham games came out around my birthday, including this game. So I'm going to buy it and play it. And I am enjoying it. So I said, if you really want to play it, people, I think you will get into it. I think you will like it. But if you want to, you know, if you want to wait a bit longer, wait till it's about £20-25 and then give it a go.
Very, very good. Good little end review there, my man. Arkham Knight's fantastic looking game. I'm actually really looking forward to Rocksteady's next game, to be fair. The Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. I think that game's going to be really
good. That looks good. Yeah.
Really, really good. And also, just to keep on the superhero note before we round off, I've been playing Marvel Snap on my phone recently, and I need someone to take it off me. I'm not going to lie, it's really fucking good. It has no right being as good as it is. It's a mobile card game, for anyone who doesn't know. It's made by one of the lead developers of Hearthstone, actually, who left the studio, made his own studio, obviously, and got into making more card games, because it's clearly what he's good at. And, mate, I kid you not, it is really good. Like, it's, if you like really quick, really snappy, quick fire mobile card games, yeah, and you like Marvel stuff, check out Marvel Snap. It's dead good, honestly.
Here's me just going onto my phone right now. Obviously, it's an audio podcast. I'm literally installing it now because
my man is installing it right this second.
Playing it 2-3 hours a night. I've listened to another podcast where they're saying exactly the same thing.
Yeah, and honestly, you know how good it is. So good. And also the artwork is like really nice as well, like on the cards. If you like Marvel characters, there is literally every Marvel character under the sun here, including some people. I'm not going to lie, I don't even know who they are. Like, I've got X-Men characters in here, yeah? I've got no idea who these characters are at all, dude, but they sure do look cool. Like this fucking dude. I don't know, man. Fuck is this? Who's this guy?
Oh, Forge. He's in the 90s cartoon series.
Mate, I've got no idea. I've got no idea.
He's a technopath. He creates weapons for the X-Men. God, it just shows to show my depth of knowledge in that regard.
Look at that right there. Got him, boys. Look at this dude.
Was Forge not in Days of Future Past or whatever it was?
Yes, he was, actually. I believe he was. I believe that was Bishop.
Bishop.
Was in Days of Future Past, and also Multiple Man. I know who. There was going to be a film of Multiple Man as well, actually, at one point.
Multiple Man. You sound so radical.
That's rad.
Rad. No, I lost track of the X-Men films. I can't lie. Apart from the original, like the original three, I kind of lost track when it started going forward and backwards and upside down, left and right. Logan, though, fantastic.
I mean, again, Hugh Jackman again, though.
Hugh Jackman, yeah, we are, dude. Deadpool 3.
And it was Hugh Jackman that approached Ryan Reynolds to do it as well, I found out. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No, yeah. To be fair, no, we do love a little natter sometimes on here on our news episodes, don't we, about films and stuff like that, man. So
we do.
Maybe we have to pull Nate back one time to grace us with his film knowledge, because man is skilled, and I think that's a fantastic time, Nate, for you to maybe give yourself a little shameless plug. Tell the people what you're about, man, what your podcast is about.
Yeah, so as again, you know, start the podcast, people, I do have to thank Connor, because he was one of the inspirations for me starting my podcast, and one of the reasons why I did actually go start my podcast. And so my podcast is called NMI Dash When You Need More Info. That's NMI Dash When You Need More Info. It's a podcast exploring the worlds of movies, video games, and TV shows. I memorize that intro section because I say it all the time on my podcast. We now have a nice little, I attempt to add a little jingle to the start of all my episodes now. It's very cheesily done, but definitely have a laugh with it, people. We've done loads of conversational topics. You know, we started off, we do a lot of favorite lists now, but we were doing discussion points of basically, you know, what is VTubing, which is one of our highest episodes. It's a very weird episode, to say the least. We've done reviews for like The Boys Season 3, Uncharted, the movie. We've done most anticipated games. We've also gone into stuff like, you know, movie, video game adaptation, lead castings. We've done quizzes. We've done also when it comes to like, you know, Elden Ring, you know, Connor's a massive Elden Ring boy. I don't know if you are as well. You know, I don't know if both of you are both Elden Ring boys. I know Connor is.
Oh, Zach, you've played Elden Ring, have you?
I haven't played Elden Ring, no. The last FromSoft game I played was Bloodborne.
So I was
He understands the sting, though. Zach understands the sting of the FromSoft game.
I was always shit at those games. Always shit at them. Like, I gave up. Like, I played Fallen Order, we spoke about earlier, and someone said to me, that's a great intro way to play. Go play Sekiro. The bastards lied to me. Like, I spent 65 quid. That was the quickest hour and a half of 65 quid I've ever spent. But then we did an episode of basically, should games renowned for their difficulty have an easy / accessible mode? And, you know, I think they should, in my opinion. I think the game will always have it. Is comic book burnout coming? You know, because obviously there's too much comic book content now. And I even say that and everything. So,
There's too much comic book content for you. Also,
we definitely did a review for the Welcome to Raccoon City movie that me and Connor watched together. And it was awful.
Yeah, film is like, we spoke about that, Zach, didn't we, briefly? I don't think you haven't taken a plunge yet, have you, to watch that?
No, I won't waste my time. I won't.
But yes, people, it's NMI When You Need More Info. It's on Spotify, Apple, iTunes. It's on all the listening platforms. We were doing pixel versions, animated versions of the show at one point. We do have a pixel versions of all of our people come on to host the show as well. If you want to find us on our socials, it's at NMICast. That's at NMICast. We got a nice little animated version for one of our recent episodes that Connor was on, which was the Favorite Horror Movies episode, where Connor's gone into a little pinhead. So it was
It's pretty cool. You made me look like Pinhead. It was proper sick.
So definitely check that out, people. So it's NMI When You Need More Info, and at NMICast on Instagram and Twitter. And again, if you've got any questions, queries, or compliments, Jay, just feel free to send some over there. And I'm definitely looking forward to possibly getting you guys on there at some point, and Zach getting a pixel version of you maybe at some point as well, because Connor's got two versions of him.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, you got to make sure the eyebrows are massive.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I spent a good 2-3 hours on each person, my man. I go into detail. I looked lovingly into Connor's eyes for so long when I was drawing his picture.
Zach has some very impressive eyebrows. This man has eyebrows for days.
You gotta make sure
you capture those boys. You know, when we were on holiday, we met an owl, didn't we, Zach? And it was a distant relative of you.
I was akin to that owl.
it was like a brother to you.
I can even turn my neck that far as well. See, look, no.
Exorcist style, spin around your neck.
But no, honestly, you know, it's been great to be on the podcast, guys. It's really hard to be on. I do love the fact I was talking to Connor briefly when you did your Fallout episode. The fact that the Fallout 4 HD remaster was announced literally just a week or so after. I was like,
every fucking time, dude. Every time we do something, every time we cover something, yeah, it comes out like within a week or so of us talking about it. It's happened with so many fucking things now, dude. I couldn't believe it. Like, we talked about Space Marine, yeah? Fucking Space Marine 2 trailer dropped out of nowhere. We had no idea that was happening. I was like, I can't believe we just discussed this. And we've had it with so many different things now. It's been ridiculous.
But we've just done literally recorded our episode a couple of days ago. It's our favorite TV shows of all time. We're doing, next one is favorite video games of all, favorite video game soundtracks of all time. Ooh. So it's very animated list. And then we'll be getting to the comfort season with all the Xmas games and TV shows and goodies later on. So yeah, ooh, check it out, people. And
Xmas games.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to more crossover, guys. It's been a pleasure to be on today.
Oh, thank you so much, man. It's been lovely to have you, Nate, as our first guest on the Miss Manual podcast. Thank you all for joining us as well, as we've gone through a brand new series called The Goats here. It's one we're going to continue on with a few more people. I think me and Zach have got ideas for a few more people we want to get on and have a chat to, don't we, Zach?
We certainly do. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to continuing this series on. And Nate, I just want to say a big thank you for helping us kick this off as well. It's been lovely to have you here. And hopefully we'll have you back again real soon.
It'll be a pleasure, guys. Honestly, it'll be a great pleasure.
Fingers crossed. Thank you ever so much, Dave, for chatting to us tonight. And thank you ever so much, everyone, for listening to us, no matter where you are, whatever time it is. Take care, and we will speak to you very soon.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.